Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Madam, there's some manner of sea creature in my private restroom.
That's Ginny Greentea. She came in with the fishing nets.
Wonderful. Please remove her from my private quarters.
Well, just drag her out by your teeth. You're the bigger monster.
I'm not putting my mouth on that slimy hag.
Well, you've changed your tune since the New Year's Eve party.
That was different.
More wine involved then?
Much more.
Good evening. Welcome, welcome. Right this way, my wonderful guests. Please mind your step as you come through. If you do feel a little crunch underfoot, well, I'm afraid you've trodden on something that I'll explain to you once you're inside. Oh, Miss Tema. Oh, how lovely to see you. Yes. You you don't wish to be rude. But what? What is that smell? Oh, yes. I don't suppose I can deny that. There is an odor drifting about. Yes. Is it Irma? That is a good guess. But not exactly. Please take your seat in the reading room, and I'll be right in. I know there's a strange smell, everyone. I'm hoping it hasn't penetrated the reading room just yet. So, quickly step into our little sanctuary, everyone. There you go. Thank you so much for coming in for a visit, my dear guests. Welcome. Hello. No. There's still time. Just scurry along and find a spot. Mr. Darling, close the door and lock it so any other stragglers are left to their fate. Won't you please?
Certainly, madam.
Yes. Thank you. Welcome to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. I am your maritime maven, Miranda Merrick. Those of you who have been steady visitors to our antiquated library and home have no doubt noticed that there seems to be a common connection, and I'll happily say an unbreakable bond between the Midnight Library and ships and the sea. You're not imagining it. there absolutely is one such attachment. And while I wouldn't dare to describe the depth of it all here at this time, I will briefly state that it comes from my family's history, going way, way back, several hundred years, with mysterious outcast women keeping company with mysterious outcast men. Some say it was wild witches co-conspirating with tempestuous pirates. Two dark and unruly groups of people or beings that no public wanted any part of. And so they found a safe harbor in one another. But I cannot confirm that aspect of it for you. Not now. What I can confirm, however, is that there is a slightly fishy saltwater odor, let's say scent, a scent hanging in the air and lingering in the corridors this evening. There are two excellent explanations for this. The first one is that all of the fishing nets and some of the sails from the fabulous clipper ship, the Mystique, are here in the library. They're supposed to be in the lower rooms, specifically in our Janet's sewing room in order for her to repair the nets. But, and this is the second part of the explanation, Irma, and I suspect the wolf pups and certainly the feral kittens, have all found the nets to be a veritable treasure trove of stinky treats. And they've dragged the loose sections of the tangled nets all through this floor of the library. I know for a fact that several crayfish and crabs are now wandering all around, so if something slimy touches your ankle, well, I'm sure that's what it is, and not any sort of underwater evil fairy being that was cleverly caught in the nets and brought here. Like a Kelpie or a Grindylo or something. Certainly not that, no. where was I? Crayfish, crabs, slime. Oh, yes, the hospitality tray. Oh, tonight's fare, being true to theme, is mostly from the sea. And since it was all brought in by the Mystique, well, consuming any part or portion may or may not agree with your tummy, your human soul, and or your visits to Dreamland. It's a pretty buffet of ghost crab, lobster, rare black lobster, wormwood smoked salmon, and she crab soup. There's also eels in gray jelly, brined beef, polecat pemmican, bilge water, and hardtack ship's biscuits for a truly nautical experience. Mind you don't chip a tooth. I thought we might begin our evening with the charming and famed folklore of maritime superstitions. You see, my lovelies, long, long ago, before engine-powered ships, the fate of those on board was much more in the hands of the elements that drove the ships, primarily the wind and the water. Out upon the open sea, for weeks or months at a time, with no word from home, no weather reports, no GPS, and no source or guarantee of new provisions, well, many believed some immortal god could be of assistance through prayer, faith, and clean living. But some of these same believers also believed in luck. Going to sea was one of the most dangerous ventures a man could undertake. So luck, especially good luck, was foremost in their minds. There are quite a few old quotes about luck, such as, "Every man is the author of his own good fortune," and "Luck comes to those who look after it," both implying that a person has some hand in the making of their own luck, good or bad. This kind of magical thinking often drove people to obey strange superstitions. They thought they could influence their fate and luck by behaving certain ways and doing or not doing certain things. They also believed that sure signs that some form of bad luck was coming could be found in random happenings. And oh my, what weird things they believed. Let me share my list. Hats. Seafaring men believed that if their hat was lost or blew away, that bad luck was dead ahead. A hat blown overboard was a sure sign that the journey would be much longer and much more trying than expected. Flowers. No one was permitted to bring flowers on board a ship. Flowers were associated with funerals and therefore unwelcome on the vessel. If any posies were smuggled onto the ship, when found, they would be flung into the sea. Salt. Salt, of course, was always found on board sailing ships. The vital substance was both a flavor enhancer and a food preservative. But how it was handled was directed by superstition. It was bad luck to simply pass the salt cell or shaker from one sailor's hand directly into the hand of another shipmate. The container of salt would be set down nearer the person who wanted it, and they would then pick it up. It was thought that spilling salt, because it was so valuable, was unlucky. This method of safely passing the salt was done in hopes of avoiding spillage on a quickly tilting ship. Long ago, there was also a little salt ritual, salting the nets, in which, before a voyage, handfuls of salt were sprinkled over the soon-to-be-used fishing nets in a manner so as to almost bless, baptize, or season the fishing nets, making them accustomed to or one with their environment, and welcoming to the much-desired fish, of course. Women. Women were always thought to be very unlucky to have on board a sailing ship. Women were always associated with terra firma and home and hearth. Men were the valiant wanderers who could master the seas. A woman on board a ship was thought to be a distraction to the men, causing them to compete or fight or to pursue romance, leading them to neglect their nautical duties. Sloppy or careless sailing could be interpreted as an insult to the sea itself, or an affront to an ancient oceanic deity like King Neptune or Poseidon, who may show their disdain for the men's lax behavior by wrecking or sinking the ship, drowning everyone on board. So there. Curiously enough, sailing ships, tall ships, and clipper ships were primarily named after women, complete with the pronouns she and her. As in, the Mary Rose has just turned over and we can all see her bottom. Or, more politely, the Mary Rose has turned hard astern into a westerly breeze and filled her sails full of fine, fair winds. How lovely. So, why engender a ship as female? The reason, my lovelies, I believe, is a beautiful one. Since antiquity, ships were given lovely female names, such as Diana, Pandora, Aphrodite, and La Santa Maria, names of goddesses and female saints. Doing this was thought to imbue the ship with divine and guiding feminine or motherly protection. The ship being symbolic of the womb, protecting and caring for the precious beings she held within. It is thought that the tradition of gendering ships as female at this time was also due to many of the world's ancient languages assigning gender, either feminine or masculine, to everyday nouns or specific items. I think it's glorious. But, my dear guests, let us turn to the dire business of witches. You, being as bright as you are, may have already considered the fact that another reason for women not being welcome on board sailing vessels in the past is that any one woman may well have been a witch. This in and of itself is no worry to any of us nowadays, though. Now, is it? Of course not. But a few hundred years ago, the only thing worse than having a typical woman on your goddess-run boat was having a powerful wicked one. So I suppose banning all women folk was to safeguard against inadvertently having a witch to slip by. Now, what's curious about all this is the fact that many a masted ship in these times was named with the word witch in the ship's title. Too many, in fact, to list for you here and now. But I thought you'd also find it fun to hear that there were several ships with very villainous names, such as the HMS Sea Devil, the HMS Vampire, the HMS Demon, and the HMS Lucifer. The name Lucifer didn't always refer to Satan, by the way. Its original meaning was simply light bringer. There were also several ships named after angels and the like, so who cares? But oh, the witchy ones. One of the first to catch my eye whilst doing my research was simply and smartly called the Witchcraft. This boldly named three-masted clipper was built in, of course, Massachusetts in 1850 and was intended to aid in trade between California and China. The sleek ship weighed 1,300 tons, was 193 feet long stem to stern, 39 feet wide, and had two decks. and she did indeed set several seafaring records during her swift travels. Notably, during these times, sharp little business cards were printed and passed out to the public, promoting the ships and boasting of their comforts and abilities. The witchcraft's various cards, which you can view today along with many others, proudly presents her as the celebrated Extreme Clipper Ship in fancy gold lettering. And the brightly colored graphic features a tenacious-looking witch flying over curling blue waves on her broom, with a charming line drawing of the actual tall ship, the Witchcraft, with its sails full of wind, gliding along in the distance. Another bold feature of the actual ship, the Clipper ship, the Witchcraft, had a most daring figurehead. A figurehead was a decorative front piece of the ship, a carved artwork, generally thought of as the ship's mascot and protective spirit. And the Witchcraft featured a hand-carved, so-called grim-looking Salem witch, airborne on her broomstick, firmly attached to the prow of the ship. The first thing anyone saw as the mighty ship pulled into port in any country was that fearsome witch. Sadly, in 1861, the Witchcraft was lost, and so were 15 lives, when she wrecked, briefly ran aground, then sank off the coast of North Carolina. One record eerily states that no wreckage from the slick sailing ship was ever recovered. Tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is serendipitously brought to you by The Ethereal Sailing Ship, The Mystique. There once was a ship, and there sort of still is, made for travel and trip, here and gone in a whiz. We whisper her name and barely speak of the nautical dame, the ship, the Mystique. Her timbers were fell from the phantom wood, then blackened in hell, the flames they withstood. Her sails made of shrouds from the risen dead, her crew damned and proud of the oath they've pled, to serve, guard, and guide the supernatural boat, riding wild wave and tide, taking fate by the throat. Her wheel in the hands of her ghostly captain, to faraway lands where the strangest things happen. Will you ever come aboard for a fateful ride? Maybe, if you've lived once before and probably died. Hail magic, hail madness, enchantment we seek. All hail, Captain Magnus. All hail, the Mystique.
I know. They've asked you to come aboard, but I don't see any contact information here. I don't know. Just maybe tack a little note in your will that you'd like to spend eternity on the Mystique, I guess. I mean, you don't really want to sit on a cloud playing a harp and eating grapes for eternity, do you? Do you?
I suppose this may be as good a point as any to indulge in a little bit of Water Witch lore. Water witches, sea witches, river witches, such wondrous things were believed about them. Although, just to make a wee clarification up front, my lovelies, you may have heard the term water witch as a complimentary title, referring to a supposedly gifted person who possesses the intuitive talent of finding the resource of potable water located on someone's property via streams and the like, running underground. These water witches are dowsers. They walk along dowsing, carrying divining rods or a certain variety of spindly tree limbs, and are said to get a sensation through the rods or to act as a conduit for the rods or branches that swing inward or turn downward, indicating that they have detected flowing water beneath the ground they stand upon. This method of locating water, as you might imagine, is a hotbed of controversy. These kinds of water witches may be thought of as fakes or fraudsters, but no one really ever feared for their lives because of them. No. That would be the other sort of water witch. They go by many names, but in written history as far back as 700 AD and all through the medieval period and beyond, both sorcerers and witches were caught and charged with controlling or turning the weather in order to cause harm. So-called tempestori were weather-controlling magicians or witches who, by concocting a potion or a broth, speaking a commanding spell, and or raising their sacred staff to the skies, could conjure up a raging storm. Storm witches were capable of bringing pelting hail, torrential downpours with rushing floods, and shooting lightning bolts that zapped and burnt crops and homes to the ground. Excuse me. Such powerful magicians or witches were also thought to have the ability to restrain or withhold rain and lock up the heavens to cause droughts or to dry up streams and rivers, to starve crops, herds of livestock, and people. It was even proclaimed in the past that the church reinforced this belief in weather witches or water witches by professing that God allowed Satan to endow witches with the power to perform these horrendous acts as a way of punishing the people for their wickedness instead of doing it himself. Because he loved the people so much? I can't believe I've just read that. In any case, the most famous wicked weather trial happened in Scotland in 1591, when a man named John Fian, along with his coven of supposedly fierce witches, were all accused of raising punishing storms that attempted to drown King James VI and halted his voyage to Denmark to join his new wife, Anne of Denmark. The storm or storms became so violent that the king was forced to abandon his romantic expedition, turn his ship around, and return to Scotland. It's a maniacal tale with obsessive paranoia, witches summoning the devil, and dramatic trials and hangings, which, come to think of it, I may love to tell at length another time. Needless to say, it didn't go well for the witches, by the way. Big shock. Now, before I bestow you with another nautical delight, my dear guests, I want to awaken your imagination and help you to visualize just what madly amazing things water witches are. I mean, were thought to be capable of doing to affect the weather, the sea, and the precious lives of sailors. This is incredible. As far back as the early years of the first century of the Common Era, Pliny the Elder wrote that it was wise for all people to crush up, or at least to poke holes, in their splitted eggshells, because eggshells had power that could be harnessed by evil sorcerers to control or bring misfortune or bad luck upon others. Several centuries later, in the 16th century, Reginald Scot wrote in his published work, The Discovery of Witchcraft, which was truly meant to refute the existence of witches, but confusingly professed that the definition of witchcraft was a pact or deal between a woman and a demon. He wrote, and I'm not sure why, that witches could shrink down, I guess, and climb into the unbroken halves of eggshells and just sail away in them. But humans, being silly and loving flights of fancy, well, they decided to believe that witches did exist and that any witch, most notably a group of witches or a fleet of witches, could paddle out to sea in the eggshells if you failed to break them up, where they could encircle a giant sailing ship and stir up a churning sea or create a whirling vortex to swallow up the ship. Did your father, uncle, brother, nephew, boyfriend, husband, or lover die in a tragic shipwreck? Maybe you caused it to happen by not disposing of your eggshells properly. Did you ever think of that, you heartless ghoul? No, you did not. For hundreds of years, "Crush those eggshells!" was shouted and touted to others in an effort to stop witches from starting their own evil yacht clubs with them. Jeez. Now, what kind of host would I be if I didn't provide you with some tangible maritime magic? I am elated to tell you about the enchanting and uniquely named clipper ship, the Cutty Sark, followed by the amazing witch tale that graced the ship with its distinctive name. The splendid clipper ship, the Cutty Sark, so claims the Greenwich Royal Museum, is the world's only surviving, nearly complete, extreme clipper ship. The Cutty Sark was constructed in 1869 on the River Leven and launched in November of that same year. The long, sleek ship was specifically designed to transport black tea from Shanghai, China, back to London, England, at lightning speed. And from 1870 to 1877, the Cutty Sark did just that, hauling 10 million pounds of tea. She was intended to sail for only 30 years, but defiantly sailed for 52. making her triumphant travels to 16 different countries to total up in miles the equivalent of 2.5 voyages to the moon and back. She also dutifully ferried 10,000 tons of coal, obscene amounts of beer, wine, and spirits, as well as 45,000 bales of sheep's wool. She was damaged in storms, her masts were wrecked during the First World War, and she nearly perished in a fire as shortly ago as 2007, and she survived. The point is, the Cutty Sark is a ship, and I believe this. The Cutty Sark is a ship with a soul of a witch. As the storied poem proclaims, there once was a crusty farmer named Tam from the Scottish village of Shanter. Tam, a Shanter. Late one night, after drinking more than his share in a local pub, tipsy Tam took to his trusty horse, Meg, and set out on a long and crooked meander back to his home. On his rambling way, he stumbled upon a wild and wondrous sight. There in the dim light, he saw with his bleary eyes a cursing coven of witches cavorting and dancing with the devil by a glowing fire in the ruins of a crumbled church called Alloway Kirk. Tam, on his horse, kept to the shadows to secretly delight in the watching of the twirling, leaping witches as they danced to the devil's music that he played on the bagpipes. The witches were all mesmerizing, but one witch stood out from the others, Nanny Dee, with her graceful prancings, her flowing locks, and her barely attached nightdress, her Cutty Sark. The witch was so beautiful. She entranced her hidden watcher, Tam, causing him to forget himself as he shouted out, "Weel done, Cutty Sark!" accidentally revealing his hiding self to the entire clan of witches. The enraged witches tore after Tam. Their aim? A punishing vengeance they would rain down upon the lecherous spy. But sloshed Tam was just keen enough to kickstart his steed into motion, fleeing from the pursuing slew of wrathful witches. Remembering that witches cannot willfully cross running water, he drove galloping Meg directly toward the river dune, with the coursing witches only inches from her backside. In a single instant, Nanny Dee, in her Cutty Sark, flew closest to the dashing horse and caught hold of her lengthy tail, pulling it off just as the bolting mare leapt onto the bridge, escaping with her drunken rider, Tam, over the river dune. To this day, you can visit and tour the famed and salaciously named ship, the Cutty Sark, in all of her glory, complete with her scantily clad witch, her Nanny Dee figurehead, at the Royal Museum's Greenwich in London, England. Oh, yes, of course the witch has the horse's tail in her hand. Well, I hate to give you the bum's rush, my lovelies, but Mr. Darling, Irma, and I are all expected for a late night tea with Captain Magnus to discuss things in the future. So please be lively in your exiting and get up. Excuse me. And mindful of, well, everything as you traverse the property. Good luck. I mean, good night. Good night, my dear guests. Good night.
Darling, you missed tea with Captain Magnus. You'll like the deal I got, though. I traded the sea hag away for a magic mouse.
Magic mouse?
Yes, it disappears before the feral kittens can catch it. Isn't that cute?
I am not trading Ginny away for an invisible mouse.
Oh, it's Ginny now, is it?
Yes. Well, she makes amazing soup. In the bathtub. Out of guests.
I see. I'll tell Stefan we no longer need the wheelbarrow. The Midnight Library would like to thank everyone at Astonishing Legends. The magical music and sound design you hear is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. All of our readings are written and produced by me, Miranda Merrick. My favorite thing is sharing them with you. If you have found joy and terror by visiting our unique library, I invite you to join me beyond the cordoned off areas in our also unique Patreon. I solemnly swear on a stack of ancient grimoires that I will personally greet you there, and that you can reach me anytime you care to write. Our patrons get everything first. Visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. If Patreon doesn't give you shivers, please find lots of strange goodies and buy us a bag of entrails in our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/midnightlibrarypod. Be sure to put pod on the end or you'll land on a boring copycat. If you already support the Midnight Library, well, you already know how much we love you. Thank you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.